Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, Why Are People Into That listeners. It's Tina Horn here. And if you're a fan of this show, then you probably know I've spent the past 3 years writing a comic book series called Safe Sex. It's spelled SFSX, mostly because Safe Sex doesn't have great SEO, even though I'm very glad people are out here typing information about safer sex, like actual safer sex, into their search engines. You may have read the single issues of the series that came out monthly from Image Comics last year, and now you can get all 7 issues collected in one paperback edition with a lovely matte finish cover. I'm stroking it right now, actually, as I record this. It's called SFSX Volume 1 Protection, and it's available wherever comic books or books of any kind are sold. It explores all the same themes of this here podcast: sex worker rights, queer identity, feminist politics, etc., but all in the context of a science fiction action-adventure social thriller with really stellar art and lots of very R-rated sex and violence. If you didn't manage to get your paws on all of the single issues, or if you're the type of person who holds out for something more durable for your bookshelf, or even if you have all 7 issues and the variant cover of the second printing of issue 1, this collection still has exclusive concept art from Jen Hickman, Tula Lote, Alejandro Gutierrez, and Katie Skelly, along with commentary from me, a new essay by trans historian Morgan M. Page, a great picture of Lindsay Dye sitting on a custom cake at our Blue Stockings release party last year, and it's all designed by the extraordinary Lauren McCubbin. I want to encourage people now more than ever to call your local book or comic book store and ask them to order your copy of Safe Sex Volume 1 Protection for you. So many indie shops are doing curbside pickup or even mail order now, and it's much more rewarding than ordering it from our overlords, though for the record, that is also an option. This book is $9.99, which fucking honestly is a deal at twice the price. And if you want to hear me talk more about the series with the queen of motherfucking darkness, Carmen Maria Machado, tune in to the Blue Stockings online Zoom party July 22nd at 4 p.m. PST. That's 7 p.m. EST. And now, continuing with the safe sex theme, here's my conversation with Jen Hickman about the making of SFSX Protection and what's next for our comic book. I'm still thinking about all you out there. Find a mask you love and wear it. Fuck the police. And thanks for listening. Jen Hickman, say hello to your adoring public.
Hello, adoring public.
Jen, I am so fucking happy to have you on the show on the occasion of the release of the first trade paperback collection of Safe Sex, the comic that we have collaborated on together.
Yeah, I am so excited to get to hold the finished book in my hands, which hopefully should be soon.
Yeah, and we started rolling, we were just talking about how, like, Katie Skelly, who did one of the variant covers and lives in Brooklyn, like, got her comps, and then Morgan Page, who wrote the intro and I believe lives in London, got her comps, and then Maxwell Lander, who contributed some of the source photographs for the design, who lives in Toronto. Like, I also got a FedEx notice about their delivery today, his delivery today, and I'm just like, okay, this is great that everyone's posting about the book. Please keep posting. But also, when do I get to hold it in my hands? There's like, I don't know, we're so bereft of the ability to touch the things that we want to touch right now in July of 2020. So I'm like, I want to touch that book. God damn it.
Yeah, exactly. I want to hold it in my hands.
Jen, let me read your bio that people will be able to read also in the back of Safe Sex Volume 1 Protection, out on July 22nd at
so
your
soon.
Local book and or comic retailer. Jen Hickman is a visual storyteller and a graduate of the Savannah College of Art and Design's Sequential Art Program. They get real excited about dystopian fiction, good coffee, and drawing hands. When they're not making comics, Jen is either cooking something fancy or at the gym. Past work includes Test, Moth and Whisper, Filthy Figments, and more. How's your COVID gym routine?
Non-existent. Absolutely
really?
Non-existent. Yeah, I go jogging, but it's really not the same as pumping iron.
Yeah. Do you have like goals of developing a good like at-home iron pumping routine?
I mean, kind of. I think I've just had to sort of shift what goals look like more into running and push-ups and pull-ups and bodyweight stuff, which, like, that's fine, but it's not my favorite.
That's definitely not non-existent.
Yeah, but, like...
It sounds like you're staying fit, staying healthy.
I guess. It's just really not the same as lifting heavy, and that is my favorite thing in the entire world, and I'm very pouty that I don't get to do that right now.
Yeah, that's really rough. Also, though, on the bright side, part of the reason that we are recording today is that soon you are going to be pumped full of sedatives, I hope, and not able to pump iron at all because
correct.
You are getting, as you put it so memorably, the bap chop. Is that what you called it?
Yes. Eating the teats, chopping the baps.
That is so exciting. How are you feeling? That's like in 2 days, huh?
No, it's tomorrow.
Oh my God, it's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you have someone to, like, help you, like, drain your...
Yes.
This is part of what I know about top surgery, is that you need someone to help drain things.
Yes, yeah. My partner is going to be the unfortunate soul responsible for all the gross stuff that happens after.
Well, I'm sure it will be an act of love that
and
happy
I'm,
to do.
I'm treating her to sushi tonight, I think, to make up for some of it. And probably for how unreasonable
that.
I might be when I'm on all of those exciting drugs.
Well, I wish you very well. I'm excited one day when we can be in the same place again and I can hug you. I'm excited about that. You're going to emerge from all of this like a new hugger. And you're iron pumping.
Ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. and like,
it's all going to be different.
So good and exciting after coronavirus.
Dude, so true. So true. I truly can't wait. Well, Jen, let's talk a little bit about how we know each other. Would you like to tell our origin story?
Our origin story. Yeah, definitely. Justin Hall, amazing human being, was putting together a queer comics anthology for queer horror shorts. And he asked me if I wanted to illustrate a story with one Tina Horn. And I really like anthologies because it's a space to like collaborate with new people and try out stuff that you haven't tried before, to experiment, to test the waters. And so me and Tina put together this short comic for Theater of Terror, Revenge of the Queers. And it was really fun, and it was a really great collaborative experience. So then, however many months later it was that, Tina, you asked me on to Safe Sex, I was like, yes, absolutely. Like, this comic book rocks, and working with Tina rocks. I definitely want to do it again.
Oh, God, you're so sweet. And
it's true.
And since you love drawing hands so much, I was like, hey, man, why don't we just draw hands, you know, fisting some sort of like semi-organic interdimensional space
yeah
wall
Yeah, just a lot of hands penetrating things.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I loved the work that you did for that. And, you know, I love your pencils and your inks and your colors. And I also, like, really appreciate that you have, as a collaborator, like, a really great balance of abstract conceptual, like, and like willingness to like go there with the abstract conceptual conversations, and then also you're like very pragmatic and organized and like focused. That's like a really good balance for me, because I think if I was working with someone who was like too pragmatic and was like unwilling to like spiral out into the cosmos with like weird conversations about, then like maybe the work that we did would like not be as weird or vibrant. And then if somebody was like too spacey, that would like bring out my space cadet side. So I find working with you to be the ideal balance.
Oh, thank you. I think you're right though, that we like balance each other out on those two, I guess, axes very, very well, with being organized, but also being willing to go play around in conceptual weirdness.
Yeah, and I think that your work is like that too. Your work is often very like abstract or emotional or like impressionistic. Like, you're clearly an illustrator, and there's like almost like a cartoonish element to some of your work.
Oh,
but then
sure,
it's also very grounded in realism. And what is the opposite of whimsical? I feel like your work doesn't have like a lot of whimsy. Not that whimsy is a bad thing, but I feel like whimsy is maybe not like the first thing that I want. But I also, when work is like too grounded in realism or like too gritty, it like doesn't have enough sort of like color or levity to it. And I feel like, again, your work has that balance.
Well, thank you. That's something that I think about a lot in visual storytelling, is this like constant push and pull between like clarity and imagination, just because like there are rules in comics, but nobody knows them, and you can ignore them if you would like to. So
or like make them up as you go along.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's good to hear that the balance that I'm striking is working.
Absolutely. And then I mean, the second that you came on, you did the coloring for issue 4.
Yes. Yeah.
You did all the pencils, the inks, and the coloring for 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
And that was really exciting too, because, you know, I had written those scripts at that point. I had written them like a year ago.
Right.
And being able to see you bring them to life when they had kind of been like on ice for a while was really exciting. And, you know, whatever like a queer aesthetic sensibility is, you've got it.
Sweet.
And and it's just like a joy to see on every level, from like the thumbnails to the like finished final product on paper in my hands. Do you want to talk a little bit, for folks who are listening, why are people into that? Listeners are often going to be tuning in to this show for like sex talk, which, like, by the way, if you want to talk about sex, kink, gender, or love, like if there's like something that you want to, sorry, I definitely almost just said get off your chest.
Amazing. Honestly, if you hadn't said it, I might have tried to work that in, so
another way that we get along. You know, there's also a lot of talk on the show inevitably about art and artistic process, and so maybe for folks who are listening who either have read the comic or are curious about picking it up, maybe we can talk a little bit about what the comic collaborative process, the comics and like sequential art collaborative process is like.
Yeah.
Since we want to encourage people to buy the trade who have maybe not read the whole thing, we should maybe have like only light spoilers.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
So proceed.
Which is going to be a little challenging, because I did draw the last, like the back half where the shit hits the fan.
True.
So we'll do our best.
So I created Safe Sex, mm-hmm. and like own the intellectual property, which I say just because I like don't own any property or like any other like living creatures. You know, I don't have any progeny.
Do you have, do you have houseplants like, or something?
No. I have like a black thumb.
Well, shit. Okay. Then this
is it. My IP is my baby and my garden and my property.
Excellent.
One day. I hope to try to keep a succulent alive.
Okay, that
in
seems
2020.
Yeah, that seems like an achievable goal. I'm rooting
Thank
for you.
Thank you. I created the characters and the world, and then I write a script in the same way that someone would write like a play or a screenplay. Mm. And then I send Jen the script, and like since Jen and I are continuing to collaborate on Safe Sex, now when I'm like writing new scripts, I can actually just kind of like address Jen in the script, which is really fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And sort of be like, remember when we had this conversation, or like, you know, this movie, yeah, or you know, this other thing that you did this one time, can you do that? But like this. So yeah. So then I send the scripts to Jen, and then you take it from there, Jen. What comes next?
Okay, so obviously then I read it. And I like to do that in two different passes. One, just to read it like as if I were just a reader and not a creator, just to get the big beats of the story and to figure out what the actions are and to like have the emotional journey that I would like the reader to have. And then I read it again, and I do this thing that I don't normally tell writers that I do, because writers get very fussy about formatting for some reason. But I read it again, and then I go like page by page, panel by panel, reformat every single line of dialogue to something that I can read very quickly. And doing that process, like, it makes sure that future Jen has a chill time with the experience, and it also makes sure that I'm like being extremely detail oriented when I move from reading to actually drawing. So that's the second
pass. I
love that. Well, I feel like every 6 months or so on Twitter, writers get into this whole like extremely fussy conversation about which formatting methods are the best for comics. And every time that happens, I just want to tell them all that like it doesn't matter what format they use, I'm always going to change it. that's definitely not seeing the forest and only seeing trees. Like, come on team. But yeah, so I read the script twice, and at that point I do layouts, which is sort of the composition of the page, both in terms of like where are the panels, how big are they, how many like tiers, is it a 9-grid, like what is the composition of the panels on the page. You know, if there is like a super important action on the page, it should probably have like the biggest real estate, that sort of thing. You know, panel size can also be dictated by like if there's a shit ton of dialogue in there, maybe don't make your letterer's life miserable by giving them, you know, 2 square inches to cram a paragraph into.
Totally.
And then from there I'll go into individual panels and just do little like really rough layouts of what I want to be in the page. And at that point, it's sort of useful to think about it like cinematography, like shot calls, and like, I think theater staging is maybe a better, easier way to access it as well. But just like, where is the viewer in the space? Where are the characters in the space? What exactly am I showing them? How am I leading their eye? And again, that's the moment to bring back the lettering and be like, where's that going to sit? Like, how can I make sure that this experience all like gels together at the end? And that step is like, oh my god, it's so exhausting mentally. Like, thumbnailing is the big heavy lifting of making comics for sure, because it's just so much, and it's so like to go from a blank page to something is just like, oh, it's so much. So that's usually
a company. So cool.
Yeah, no, it's where the, well, I don't know, I feel like the magic really happens when lettering hits the page, because then you're like, oh my god, it's a comic. But like a lot of the like really important foundation stuff happens at the layout stage. So I like to pair it with a really vital activity called lying on the floor and whining. Where every like 3 or 4 pages, I will just in the middle of my studio with 5 other artists who are also working, just lie down in the middle of the floor and whine.
Well, you know, a little like, you know, behind the scenes, there's absolutely no lying on the floor and whining in the writing process.
No, never. So, I'm sure it's painless.
Yeah, no. But have you seen Mother?
No, it's been on my list though.
I think actually Mother would be a bananas movie to watch while recovering from surgery.
Okay, maybe I'll see if it's streaming somewhere, because my current plan is just to like loop the Lord of the Rings movies.
That is, God, what a great idea. Right? So Javier Bardem in the movie Mother.
Oh, okay, you've sold me. I'm obsessed with his face.
Oh, there's plenty of his beautiful fucking face in this movie. Spoiler, Javier Bardem's character is like essentially God. Like he plays God in like the allegory, but like he's also like a poet who is like constantly like storming up to his study to write and is like constantly throwing tantrums about how everything in the house is like not conducive to him being able to write. And he has this fucking crystal in his office that he's like gets very upset if anyone like touches or like looks askance at his crystal, because his crystal has to be like right in the exact spot in order for him to like have the inspiration to like create. And that's incredible. That's usually like, that's what I refer to like when I get into my like Javier Bardem like crystal stage of like, don't look at my crystal, I'm writing. Anyway, so layout.
After that, I will just sort of, because I work all digitally, I just blow it up and then I do quote unquote pencils. And I know like a lot of really old school comic book artists make their pencils incredibly gorgeous and like put in shading and rendering and all of this stuff before passing it off to an inker. And I do none of that. It's all like just basic construction of figures to make sure that like the thumb's on the right side of the hand and like the objects are in perspective instead of just, you know, magically off obeying their own rules. Sometimes I'll tweak things a little bit at that point. Like, I have a tendency to get everything really, really crowded, so it used to be that pretty much every fucking panel I'd have to, like, pull the shot out a little bit more to just give everything more breathing space. I've gotten a little bit better about that over the years, but that's the moment where I'll just make little adjustments and make sure that it is something that I can ink off of. Because inking is, like, ugh, I love inking so much. I'm obsessed with it. It's definitely my favorite stage of the process.
That's cool.
It's rendering, it's mark making, it's like how you direct the eye with like black and white, basically. And so it like your tool set is so limited, and you just sit there and you've already done all of your work with the construction. So it's the pretty fun, fulfilling part. And you know, you can put on a good podcast or audiobook and just ink. It's lovely. I used to work traditionally, and every now and then I think I should try it again, but I'm just so much faster digitally.
Like on a tablet?
Yes, yeah.
Cool. And you have like a special pen?
Yeah, it comes with a little pen. It takes one AAA battery that fucking is always almost out of juice, it feels like. But I call it inking specifically because it's not so much like tracing the construction as like actual like rendering and like defining light and stuff like that. So it's sort of a different mindset than just like, here's the lines.
That totally makes sense. I'm sure that it is a very obnoxious thing when people think that what you are doing is tracing the work that you already did.
Yeah, isn't that, there's some movie where somebody's a comic book, is it like Trainspotting or something?
Chasing Amy,
you're right, it's Chasing Amy. Yeah, I don't know why I get those.
That's like peak Gen X indie cinema. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, thank you. That's valid.
They were all there. Yeah, everybody in Trainspotting is way too strung out to draw.
That's also true.
Which I guess is something, yeah, it's not something positive you can say about the characters of Chasing Amy. It's not just tracing. You know, one part of the collaboration that is in this stage also is that, like, when you're doing, like, you do the layouts and then send me the layouts. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important stage where I actually need to be paying attention. Yes. And if there's something that I want to be different, I should probably say it then, because if I say it later, it's that's so annoying.
Because if things are at the layout stage, it's like super painless to change things up and to redo things. But if I've already like slaved over the exact same thing three times in a row, like from layout to pencils to inks, and then, you know, someone's like, oh, what if this were different, that's already like a day's work that I put into something that they could have said that at the get-go.
Totally.
Yeah, which, so, like, I don't know, you've never done that to me, I don't think.
I mean, I think I did it a couple of times, but it was maybe not, like, egregious. And you, I mean, again, I will say,
I don't hold a grudge, so that's nice.
Well, thank you. I'm very glad. And also, that is another thing that I need in collaborators is like, I'm not a visual artist. And so even though I can be like sensitive to and aware of what the process is that you're doing, and that is kind of the way that I think I have a little bit of a like producer brain about everything, like a macro brain about everything. And I kind of want to understand like what everyone is doing and like the value of everyone's labor that they're contributing.
Oh, totally.
But I don't always know. And also sometimes I am Javier Bardem being really precious about my crystal and I like don't notice something until you've inked it. And then I'm like, wait a minute. I don't even remember what it was, but I do remember that I was like, do you think that maybe like this composition could be different or like this character could be wearing something different? I don't even fucking remember what it was.
No, I wish I could remember, but never happened.
But then you were like, I will totally do this time. And just so you know, like, please try to notice this earlier because you definitely could have noticed this in the layout in like the thumbnail stage and it would have been way easier for me to change it then. And I was like, because you were so direct about it, I like got that message loud and clear.
Well, I'm glad that past me did the right thing.
You'll usually like finish like a few pages and then send them to me. And so like while you're working on the next batch of pages, I can like meticulously go through the pages that you've already done and make sure again that like everything is fine because every stage that goes on makes it more of a pain in the ass to change.
Totally, exactly. Yeah, I like getting that feedback right away, and working in batches tends to make that easier as well for everybody involved.
And then what about coloring?
Oh yeah. So after I finish inking, I color. And like in modern comics, it is most normal for this step to be handed off to somebody else. It used to be very common for people to have separate pencilers and inkers, but that is becoming less and less of a normal thing in the modern industry. But coloring is still separated out fairly regularly. It's unusual that I color my own work, but I fucking love it.
What do you love about it?
Okay, so I used to like just be a colorist when I entered the comic book industry in like 2014, I think. And I loved taking somebody's like black and white inks and sort of bringing them to life. And I think of it as like providing the soundtrack to a movie in a lot of ways.
Oh my God, because it sets
the tone and it helps people, like especially if some artist has like maybe a kind of unclear character design where you like can't immediately tell who someone is from their silhouette, you can usually like with their color palettes like really quickly pick people out. And so it's enhancing what's already there and adding clarity to it. I just really like coloring. It's, I don't know, maybe I'm a 4-year-old at heart.
Well, I'm sure also it's not just like coloring a coloring book.
Oh, good Lord, no. No, but every now and then I'm worried that some family member of mine is going to try and give me a adult coloring book for Christmas and I'm going to just have an aneurysm immediately. It's not,
would that be, what,
it's not
would that be relaxing?
No, it would be the worst. It would be actually excruciating.
I will never even give you like an adult coloring book, even though that might seem like the kind of...
There's a really fun game that I used to play back in art school and a little bit before. Basically, you get a bunch of artists and you get 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper and Sharpies and everybody draws a dick. And then you hand your paper off to the person on your left and then everyone has 5 minutes to try and turn that dick into anything else.
So it's like an exquisite corpse,
just with dicks. So, you know, like you can make it into an elephant maybe, you know, with a trunk or something, or you can make it, you know, like there's a mushroom or whatever, depending on how somebody's drawn it. And then at the end of the 5 minutes, you vote who has hidden the dick the best.
Oh, that is fantastic.
So that's like the only thing even in the ballpark of an adult's coloring book where I'm like, I could do that.
I just want to go back to something that you said a second ago about coloring, which is the idea of coloring as music. Coloring gives the art that kind of like aural dimension, because that's something I think about a lot as a script writer. I mean, you can smell a comic, like you can smell the paper, but sure. you can't smell if something smells good, bad, or ugly. Like in the comic, you kind of have to have someone like, you, I mean, I guess you can have like stink lines, right? And you can have like like sound effects, right. which actually Steve Wands, our letterer, yeah. does. It does a lot of really creative stuff with yes. the sound effects, which is really fun, including some of the color stuff that you were talking about, like different colors for different characters and like different colors for different kinds of things that are happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, one dimension that I don't have to work with necessarily is music. Right. And it's really nice to think of the color as doing something similar.
Yeah, I do think it works on a lot of levels. It can affect the pacing. It can affect how emotional beats hit. It can change the tone of a piece. It can mm-hmm. do, like, a lot of it accomplishes a lot of the same stuff that a soundtrack would. And so I think it's a really nice, like, analogy to make people understand why good coloring is so important to a comic.
Tell me a part of making Safe Sex that was really challenging.
Ooh,
for you.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's easy. I was incredibly intimidated by taking over from Dowling, like, specifically, because he has this heavy blacks, textural, semi-realism, like, cinematic style that is very, like, chic and polished and, like, old school in a very, like, classic, timeless sort of way. And my natural inclinations are not really that similar on a lot of levels, but I really wanted to make readers like have a easy transition between him and me. So I wanted to try and like push my art a little more in his direction. So I shifted out my inking brushes for ones that I thought were kind of like what he was using. And then I tried to like do what he was doing specifically in the inks, in like the surface level mark making, to try and bring us together in a sort of way. And it, you know, like it was fun to get out of my comfort zone, but it was also like a little hard to try these things that didn't immediately come to mind for like how I try to make art. So that was definitely a challenge, but I think it was a good challenge. I think it helped, it pushed me to grow in a direction that I don't think I would have tried on my own, and hopefully readers didn't get too bothered by the switch.
Well, I did not hear a single person say that they were bothered. In fact, what I heard was just people being so stoked in your art, and I didn't even hear people being like confused about, well, like, why is there a different artist? And I don't know. I mean, I think that's really admirable that you challenged yourself in that way. But I also think that there is so much that you bring in your own style and your own technique and your own talent to the series that if you want to continue to work in that style or like go into that mode, that's great. But also if for future issues you yeah, are like, yeah. and now I want to like bust out in this other direction, you know that I support that.
Now that we've carried readers through that switch, I do feel much more comfortable like playing around and maybe pushing things that are more in my wheelhouse moving forward. But it'll depend how I'm feeling at the time and what I feel the story needs. Because at the end of the day, like, that's got to come first. Not, like, my preferences, but what is going to make the strongest version of Safe Sex that we possibly can. And I know that sounds as, like, super fucking cheesy, but it's, like, how I look at every book I do. So that's not going to change.
This is a safe space for cheesiness.
Okay, good. Excellent. At the top, when you were mentioning that I'm an illustrator but with a more cartoony style, I do think that me bringing that to the story is good for it.
Yeah.
Because my big strength, I think, is character acting. And totally. A lot of what is going to make readers love a character and then get their hearts broken when bad things happen to the character is how much, you know, we can empathize with. Yeah, how much they can feel for another character. Fortunately, that's something that comes very naturally to me and that I've really worked on over the years, and I would like to lean into that even more. I wouldn't say that it's going to get, like, terribly more anime-looking or anything like that, but I definitely want to push it more towards, you know, expressive qualities.
That is great. I am fully in support of that, and, like, even having Alejandro Gutierrez doing like a pop-in issue and then the like Playboy short comic that Alejandro and I made. I feel like there's room in the safe sex universe for maximalism and camp and visual gags and like
and actual gags
and actual gags and like just more expression. And I don't know, the thing that keeps coming into my mind when you were even talking about like getting into like anime territory is that like that like anime convention, I mean, I guess people are familiar with it now because of emojis where there's just like a stream of tears like coming off of someone's face. And like sometimes it's out of like excitement or nervousness or they're actually crying, but that just like extreme outsized emotion. I am like all about that.
Yeah, that's fun as hell to try and work in.
I want safe sex to be in, I'm obsessed with body genres, like genres that have an effect on your body, right? So like I want the story to make people hard and wet and, you know, dilated and sweaty, and I want their hearts to race and break, and I want them to leak out their eyeballs and noses, and I want them to drool, and I want them to be scared, and I want them to be relieved and elated. Like I want to make, you know, I want to pull all of that out of everybody.
Yeah.
And affect as many bodies as possible without even physically touching them, which again, I cannot do right now.
Tragic. No, but that's, so yeah, tragic. that is a fucking awesome thing to aim for. And I don't know, we'll have to wait for a reader response when the trade drops to get all of those reactions all in one go. But I personally cannot wait to read the reactions online.
Yeah, me too. And I mean, I stay out of the comments, but
no, yeah, that's good. Yeah.
You'll just tell me the nice things that people say. Yeah, you know, in the trade, there is some exclusive back matter stuff, even for the people listening who have all 7 issues and maybe like all 7 issues and the variant of issue 1 with the Katie Skelly cover. There is going to be stuff in the book, not only having all the issues collected, but also process porn, basically, of like sketches, character design by Jen, and some like layout stuff from Alejandra, and some like concept sketches for the covers by Tula Lote, who did most of our covers. And then I like wrote a little thing about like all of the collaborators. And like one of the things that I wrote about, which I bring up because you were talking about your strength in like character acting, is like, I like listed a bunch of my favorite things that you did. So when you do get the comps, again, you're going to be recovering from surgery.
Yeah, you're going to harvest my tears, I bet.
Yes. Your partner's going to have to drain those as well.
Yeah, put them into a little vial and mail them to you.
Yes. There's a panel that you did in issue 6. Again, I will not have spoilers, but there is a panel of Sylvia's face.
Yes.
Let's just say Sylvia is saying, put the gun down, baby. And the subtlety of everything that is written on Sylvia's face in this moment, it's really extraordinary, man. It's like,
aww,
like as a writer to have like written the story and the drama and the dialogue, but also to have like created these characters, and then it is almost like the expression on Sylvia's face in this panel, it almost sort of tricks me into thinking that there is like a living actress playing the character. You know what I mean?
And yeah, that's so like, cool. Holy shit.
And that not only is there a living actress playing the character, but that she is really good at her job, and that I'm like complimenting a fake person that doesn't exist in order to compliment you. That this like actress is so good at her job that she like, I can see in her face that she understands everything that is significant for all of the characters that is in this one moment. And it is a lot of conflicting emotions.
Thank you.
And you did that with a face that you draw that you drew. That's it's amazing.
Yeah, I put a tablet pencil down and there it was. I really appreciate that. And that's my jam. Like, that is what I like doing. That is by far my favorite.
I could just go on and on and on about all the amazing stuff that you did, but I guess people are just gonna have to. I mean, okay, this is actually a good segue. What were some of your favorite parts about making the book?
I loved all of the fashion notes that you left in the script and chasing those down and bringing them to life. That was so much fun, for sure. All of the dress
I'm
up.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad because I really tried to give myself a crash course in fashion for this comic because I have a pretty casual fashion sense, but I can't remember if I told you this, but at I think it was at the FlameCon in New York where we met, or it might have been the FlameCon the year before, I went to a panel called Sailor Moon Made Me Gay. So, I mean, Sailor Moon made me gay, so I was like, I gotta go to this panel. And it was a beautiful panel, and a lot of what they were talking about was all of this really deep fashion knowledge that informs their work as comics creators, and that informed the creators of both the original manga of Sailor Moon and then also the anime. And I had so much respect for it because it was I realized that it was not something that I fashion was not a place that I would have thought to put symbolism before hearing people talk about that. And then the way they were talking about it, I was this is so deep and rich. And also for me, it's total internalized misogyny that I think that this is not important.
Well, shit, I had no idea about any of that. And I just came in and was like, all these fashion choices are so much fun. I'm so here for them.
I am so glad. Also, I can I can dress my children and then I can just wear soft clothes for the rest of my life.
Oh, yeah, same. I on a personal level approach fashion antagonistically. I am not a fashion person. I loathe the concept. But when I'm drawing and when I'm creating a comic, oh yes, hell yes, let's get into fashion for sure. And great. I loved that. It added a lot, I think.
Well, you really brought a lot of it to life. And there's some of the fashion that is just these characters dressing up cool, but then of course there's a lot of fetish symbolism, which was something that I came to writing comics with an understanding of. I've said this a million times, basically every time I talk about collaborating with you, just how fucking refreshing it is to be able to talk about things that have to do with queerness, things that have to do with porn, things that have to do with sexuality, things that have to do with fetishism, things that have to do with sex toys. And I can give you a tip or a suggestion. You're also yeah, I know that. I've drawn that.
Yeah, you don't have to sit there and educate me in addition to giving me the specifics of how this is going to work within the world. I'm there already.
Totally.
Yeah.
Was there a sequence that you really enjoyed drawing, or that even maybe surprised you, or was something that you had never tried to draw before?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is a number of our beloved children going through the air ducts, and I'm gonna leave it. That's probably vague enough, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but very, very much a diehard scenario. But the comedy and the sexiness inherent in that scene, when I read it, I didn't really, I wasn't there. And then I started laying it out, and all of a sudden I was this is hilarious, and this is incredibly sexually charged, and also there's that level of danger to the whole thing. And I had a fucking blast with that scene.
I am so glad you also did such a good job with it, because first of all, just the physics of that scene are a little dubious.
It's diehard logic. At some point it is an action scene, and you don't there's some leeway that the audience will give you.
100%. But also only because of how you like brought it to life with like the right amount of realism and also like all those elements that you just named, the sexiness, the humor, the danger, like when mm-hmm. those things are vivid enough, then I don't think people are going to spend a lot of time being like, is that really how you would belay up the right. side of an air duct?
yeah, you've earned some leeway at that point, or at least people are into the thing that you've created enough that they're not going to question the reality of it. And yeah, I had a fucking blast with that.
Well, I'm really glad. I definitely remember going to write that part of the story, and when you're writing like a heist or a jailbreak, which is what, you know, sort of the main shape of the arc of Protection is, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of have to like do the thing where you put yourself in the middle of the labyrinth and then walk out of it backwards and right. while forgetting that you know how to get out because you built it. And so you have to like sort of figure out how to surprise yourself and mm-hmm. you know, but then also think tactically, like if I was going to break into this building,
right,
what would I do? And I when I was writing it, I was like, well, I guess I would go through the air ducts, but I just feel like that's so diehard slash alien slash like a cliche thing yeah, that like everybody does.
Like standard.
But then, and then I was rereading the His Dark Materials books, mm-hmm. and there's a scene in The Golden Compass where a character is crawling through air ducts, and I got all the way to the end of that scene in the book. Mm-hmm. I was totally gripped by what was happening. It was super suspenseful, which is like extra hard to do with prose, like in
absolutely.
A novel, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, with action scenes, yeah.
And I got all the way to the end where I was like, wait a minute, this is an air duct scene and I am gripped right now because, again, like you were saying, when the stakes are there and you care about the characters and there are the other elements that are unique to that world and that character and that story, like mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if it's a cliche or, right. an, you know, and then you can also make it like an homage to.
Oh, totally.
Things that you love. So
yeah.
But all this is to say, I think that as a writer, if I'm worried about being cliche and something coming across as stale, there's so much that you do as the artist that makes an idea that potentially could be stale, not stale.
Yeah, I mean that's part of the joy of comics being a team sport, basically, right? Like
right. It's the only team sport I've ever enjoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, same.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So when Justin Hall introduced us, I like went to your website and I like really loved your work. And I especially saw that there was a lot of really good horror on there and good like sort of like science fiction mm-hmm. and like supernatural. I don't know, with a little bit of like I was saying earlier, like impressionistic, not necessarily like strict genre stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was like also like I was saying earlier, like a lot of queerness to your work. And also, I guess now that I'm thinking about it, when we were working on the short story for Theater of Terror, mm-hmm. which has some queer sex content. And then when yes. we started talking about safe sex, it like didn't even occur to me until later when you sent me a link to some of your more explicit porn
yeah.
that you've drawn that I was like, wait, I've seen their porn before. And then I was just like, oh, I guess just when I get along with someone, I just assume that they've made queer porn, and I guess in this case I was correct.
Yep.
So I guess, can you talk a little bit about your approach to like queer porn and smut and erotics in your in your comics?
Yeah absolutely. So right now all of my queer smut comics are published by Filthy Figments, which is a subscription site that also has a ebook store associated with it. They're fucking awesome. I love working with them. And what's also unique about it is that this is the only area of my career where it's not a collaboration. It is just me, and it is just like whatever enters my head to do. I have a pretty awesome amount of creative freedom. When I'm coming to making queer smut, I get very in my head about all of the technical stuff that I want to try to do, which, like, I don't know, is very interesting to me, and I can think about this shit for hours and, like, play with it and try different takes on the same problem, because, you know, like, all visual storytelling is problem solving at the end of the day. And if the problem that I'm trying to solve is somebody with their little eyeballs is looking at my smut on a screen, like, how am I going to titillate them? How am I going to get a reaction from them? Like, there's a million ways to solve that problem. I guess my Sisyphean battle is with getting readers to play with time in the same way that I do. Because I think that, like, time on a comic page.
We've talked about time and sex in
Yeah, because, like, you have the time of the events themselves that you're depicting, and then you have the way that they are broken up into panels, and then you have like how long a reader's eyeballs are going to spend on the page. And so it's all these different elements that you're juggling together, and so I'm constantly obsessed with trying different, like, techniques to either, like, create a like very long drawn out, like, edging sort of time, if you will, versus just, like, throwing it all out on the page and being like, well, it's up to you to stare at it long enough that it makes you horny. I don't know. And I'm just constantly obsessed with time in porn specifically. And then the other thing that was sort of a game changer for me when I realized it is that the purpose of a porn comic at the end of the day is absolutely not to get someone's rocks off, but to frustrate them. And the minute that I came to terms with that I was like, oh, what I'm really doing here is making people extremely frustrated and not giving them everything that they want, I immediately had so much more fun with it.
Oh my God, that is so wise and true.
And it makes your job easier too, because it's so much easier to blueball somebody than it is to, like, really show them exactly, because, you know, then at the point it's sort of your version of what's extremely hot and what's the payoff for you, and that can be a little individual.
People love tease and denial.
Yep.
People pay real good money to be teased and denied. So,
yeah. And my comics are so cheap.
So, Filthy Figments is the service. So, people should search for.
Yes. Yeah. That's
Jen Hickman on Filthy Figments.
That's the home of all of my erotica right now.
Excellent.
Yes.
So, speaking of erotica, you know, the thing that is really exciting about the future of safe sex is that COVID is changing things yet again. There's no stability in this world, but we're at Image, we've got our team, and one goal that I have for the next story arc of safe sex is to really push some boundaries in the porniness of what we show. But the thing that is great about what you just said about, like, frustrating and flustering and teasing and denying people also is that, like, we can probably get away with more by bringing them, like, right up to the brink, edging them, if you will.
Yes.
People will be hopefully scandalized, but we will still be able to keep our distribution.
Yeah. That's fingers crossed that we can ride that line.
Is there any kind of sex or kink scenario that you have been, like, dying to draw, especially, like, in the context of a larger series like Safe Sex?
That's really tough. Because, unfortunately, the thing that comes to mind is, like, what I don't want to draw. And, like, honestly, anything with a ton of liquids is just a pain in the ass to render.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, but that's like a very technical, like, cop out. Like, I don't want to try hard.
You don't want things to be wet?
I know, it's a curse. It's absolutely a curse. But doing liquidy stuff so that it reads and is pleasant to behold is really challenging.
Okay, I will keep the water sports to a minimum. Or we'll suggest it. And then Steve can do a nice splashing sound effect.
Yeah, honestly. And like, I'm clearly not afraid to be challenged. Like, if I'm going to complain about something being difficult, that doesn't mean I'm not going to give it 100%.
Yeah, you're just going to lie on your back on the floor for a while.
Yep, exactly. There will just be a little more floor time. Obviously, like, anything with a shit ton of costuming and get-ups and visual over-the-top aspects, that's always going to be really, really fun and work really well in a comic.
I think that could be arranged.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, shit like Pony Play and Pet Play, that has a fantastic visual element to it that is sort of built into that. I feel like most everything is fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll try to get you a even if it's in the background, a nice Pony Play scene.
There
to
we
draw.
Go. The butchery thing. Bring that back, please. The fresh meat party.
Fresh meat party. Yeah.
Yes, I would like to do that again. Yes, that would be so much fun.
Yeah, I mean they definitely make it seem like it's it's an annual thing. So perfect. we gotta do the fresh meat party again.
Yeah, and honestly, that could be a fun callback and sort of like.
Yeah, totally. We're building a world in which there's consistency and continuity and stuff. Next question is a little bit of a tease for what we've been talking about working on for.
Oh yes.
The next story arc.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you a personal question.
Okay.
Would you fuck a robot? Yeah. And if so, how?
My gut instinct is to just say yes. But then I started thinking about it a little bit more. And I immediately got into like worrisome consent concerns. Like I went down this rabbit hole of like sentience and... Mm. That sort of thing. And then I was like, okay, we can't do that. We have to back up and just make it a straightforward, like, this is a robot. It is programmed. It has no intelligence of its own. Its autonomy is not anything like a human's. So
that's a big question is like,
what is a robot to you?
Right. And also like, you know, for some people, the robot having consciousness would be part of the appeal, but then mm-hmm. for some people the robot not having consciousness would be preferable because then that keeps us out of the like murky ethical territory of like if something has synthetic consciousness, can it consent? There's some people who like philosophically compare that to the philosophy around an animal's ability to consent, right?
Oh, so like right that makes sense. Yeah,
even though obviously like animals have an organic consciousness, but...
Yeah, no, I can see that connection, and I think that's a solid, like, bridge between the two concepts.
I mean, I guess the way of looking at it is, like, if we don't fully understand animal consciousness, let's just not fuck them until we know for sure that we...
Yeah.
that we understand so them. And, like, same with synthetic...
Exactly.
...consciousness. Like, until we, like, actually feel like we can fully understand it, then, like, let's assume that... They can't consent, but how frustrating would it be to be a self-aware robot that really wants to fuck, but everyone's like, "That's unethical. It's unethical for me to fuck you."
I would read the hell out of that comic.
Well, now I'm just brainstorming. You might actually have to draw the hell out of that comic.
I would draw the hell out of that comic.
Okay, so let's put that aside. Your robot. I am now, as the person who is providing you with the scenario, I am confirming for you that this is a machine with no artificial intelligence, no synthetic consciousness, no free will.
Perfect. Which sounds weirder somehow, but I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially a sex toy. It's like it's an elaborate vibrator. So like if you it essentially the question becomes if you could have any kind of sex toy what would it be?
Right. Way back, I want to say for either the PlayStation 1 or for like the Super Nintendo, like something way back in the day, there was a very trippy video game that was music based. And oh no, it must have been Nintendo, because it relied heavily on the vibrator pack in your game controller. And when you were doing well, and when you were in sync with the beat, and when you were going down this little, like, trippy, you know, acid trip-looking tunnel, and you were doing all the things right, the thing would pulse, you know, in your hands, presumably right by your lap. And I see the appeal a lot of a gamified sex toy that is a robot. Like, that seems fun.
So there would be also like a software component to it? Like a VR?
Yeah. Because I do think that software would be the distinction between a sex toy and a robot. Like, it has to be programmable for sure. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds fun. I also like the idea of the like music again.
Yeah.
Music being a part of how you fuck the machine.
Yeah.
How the machine fucks you.
Sure. Whichever.
Fun. Well, yeah. And as we talked about, I think when we did the Instagram live, I also really appreciated that you were like, the robots don't have to be humanoid.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean,
like,
why
aren't they like little like BB-8s, you know, like rolling totally on your dick?
That that definitely opens up like a really like a wider idea space to play in visually. I don't know if like American consumer culture is going to be as into it as I personally am, but yeah, like they don't need to be humanoid. Like, what about those fucking, I don't know, like those little turrets from Portal? Like, imagine that, but for sex.
I mean, I think it's all about diversity is very important.
Exactly.
So I feel like we can have a like sex robot that's like a little gray box, and we can have, you know, little like turrets and spherical BB-8s and like various things. And then we can also totally have like fembot bimbos and himbos.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for for answering that question and going down that supernatural hypothetical ethical portal.
Yeah.
With me.
Wait, what's your answer really fast?
Oh, or, God, you know, I would really fuck fast. I would fuck the hell out of any robot. I mean, I think that my ideal, well, okay, so like with the sentience, I guess, like, I am concerned about robot consent. And by robot consent, I mean, like, the ability of a synthetic consciousness to consent. But, like, I kind of feel like if it can play chess and pass a Turing test, not that it necessarily has to pass a Turing test to be worthy of being fuckable, but like if it's like, so if we're talking like so sophisticated that it is self-aware, then I kind of feel like the foundation of ethics is like mutual respect. So like,
right,
I would want to respect that a consciousness could consent to fuck.
Hell yeah.
So there's that. But like, honestly, my like robot like sex toy fantasies are like actually really similar to the scene in the first season of Westworld where Tessa Thompson is just like riding this robot in bed and would want like a robot that was like strong enough to like pick me up and like slam me against the wall and then just like get hard and stay hard until I was done.
Yeah.
Stamina is what I'm looking for in a machine.
Totally.
So
absolutely.
In that Tessa Thompson scene in Westworld, like the robot like resembles a human man, like with a phallus for her to ride. But like, just to be clear, I'm looking for that like physical strength and stamina and equipment, and like there could be like all kinds of things that robot could look like Tessa Thompson, for example.
Yeah, please.
Actually, let's just smush those two characters together, and like, that's what I want. But there was something I thought really great about that scene that you don't see in like fiction about sex robots a lot. Like usually sex robots are like portrayed as like playmate receptacles for their like God complex having Dr. Frankenstein creators, right? And like I really liked that Tessa Thompson, even if she is like an evil corporate bitch or whatever, that she was like, I'm gonna like use this thing to like work up a sweat. Also great for like while we can't go to the gym,
you know,
bringing
this
it all
needs
back
to hit the market immediately.
Yes, I want some, and then I want to fuck it and then I want to lift it.
Oh no. Somebody's
and then I wanted
make,
to spot
like, a P90X me. But for sex robots.
Yep. Well, that's that's inevitable.
Yeah. All right. I'm here for this future.
Yeah, I need an angel investor for this. Yeah,
yes.
If you are listening to this and you would like to fund, Jen will design it. It will be great. I feel like you'll design all the little like accessories that like that come with it that you can fuck but don't look like a human.
Yeah, I'm gonna expand a lot of boundaries for people. It's gonna be great.
I love it. And then once they see the porn that you make of it, they're gonna be like, oh, that's how I would get off with that thing. Yes, I want that.
Yeah, secret instructional manuals.
Yes. Yes, that's all comics really are.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for asking. So I hope that gets people excited for what we are working on for the future. We will certainly be able to say more before the year is up, and hopefully people will be able to see more before the year is up.
Yeah.
Oh, there's still so much more 2020 to do. Two more questions. One is, what are you working on in 2020 besides you did the work already for the Safe Sex Trade that's coming out on July 22nd, wherever books or comics are sold. But what else are you working on or that we're going to see released from your work in 2020?
Yeah, I am currently doing another serial chapter in my weird Filthy Figments world that I've created. I think it's going to be the final chapter. It is sci-fi. It is a lot of dysfunctional queers, and there's a lot of rope bondage in it, either September or August.
Cool.
So check that out. It's fun. And, you know, tell me how the time works for you.
It's all in the timing.
Yep.
Excellent. Amazing. Is there anything else that you are working on?
Yeah. I actually, like 2 days ago, wrapped up a erotic horror graphic novel that I am doing with Zach Thompson through Aftershock Comics. And it was supposed to start launching in... Oh, time is so hard in 2020. I want to say it was supposed to start in June. But due to everything, it got delayed and it is going to start dropping monthly in September. So y'all should check that out. It is called Lonely Receiver.
That is so great. I started following Zach when you posted about your collaboration and just a lot of really 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 great horror taste on Zach, like I'm just like I can't wait to
And it's a weird one, and this is coming from me. When I say it's a weird one, I'm not fucking around.
Yes.
it's gonna be a trip.
I can't wait. Yeah. Hit subscribe.
Yes.
Why should people buy Safe Sex Volume 1 Protection?
I'm just like, there's too many reasons, honestly. It is a sexy thriller. Mm-hmm. It is queer as fuck. Mm-hmm. It is both campy and full of heart. And I guess the art's okay.
The art is excellent.
Sweet, I was fishing there. It's also a dystopia that is very close to home, and I found that incredibly cathartic, but it might also be upsetting, so, you know, come get us upset with us.
Yes, I think that it's very useful to get upset.
Oh,
people should feel, if people are not feeling shook up right now, what are they doing?
Yeah.
If you want to get all shook up, then you should check out Safe Sex Volume 1 Protection. I happen to know that you can pre-order it right now, or once it is out, order it from the Blue Stockings online store. So
yes.
I highly recommend that people order from Blue Stockings and support that wonderful store. The thing that is exciting about the trade paperback collection is that it's available in places that sell books, not just places that sell comic books. So I highly recommend that you call your local comic book store. You know, again, July 2020, whatever phase your area is in right now, like probably comic book stores are doing curbside pickup or courier delivery or, you know, a social distance like pickup from the store, or maybe even like mail order. If you don't have a local comic book store or it's not possible, I mean, but if they don't have it, like you calling and asking for it is really good for us because it lets them know that people are interested and then they might order it because they have had interest. So most comic book stores will order something for you if they do not currently have it, especially a trade.
So, they enjoy doing that.
And we actually like decided to make it $9.99 even though we could have made it twice that much, and it is really a deal at twice the price.
Honestly, it is, for that amount of content, like that's unusual.
Yeah, it's 7 issues and there's a lot of exclusive back matter in it, and including some sort of behind the scenes process art by Jen. And you know, if people want to read the whole story cohesively like a graphic novel or just have something like a little bit more durable for their bookshelf, you know, I hope that people pick it up and just stay tuned for more comics collaborations between me and Jen Hickman. And thanks for coming on the pod.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on. This was really fun.
Do you have any opinions about sex, kink, gender, or love, like that you have that you don't feel like you have another place to talk about them, completely putting you on the spot on my sex, since I had you on my sex podcast and we mostly talked about drawing?
That is true. It's a total bait and switch for the listeners. Nothing like specific, or like people need to take some chill pills and let people have fun.
There it is.
That's it.
There
it is. That's the hot take from me, is just
I love it.
Just calm down even.
You and Taylor Swift just want everyone just to calm down.
Oh no. this is an unfortunate brand linkage. We can't have this.
I mean, she's very successful, so.
I guess. That is true.
If her fans are our fans, I am fine with that.
Fair.
Tay-Tay, please blurb our book.
Yeah, Tay-Tay, blurb our book. There we go. We should pursue that for volume 2.
Also, I am definitely not convinced that she is not a sex robot. So.
I was just going to suggest to you that we make her a knockoff sex robot in our story.
We'll discuss off mic.
Yes.
Jen, I wish you wellness and recovery in general, but especially since you are getting chopped.
Yeah,
and in your own words, I can't wait to talk to you soon. And thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tina.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.